the Scooter Breaking In, we open the show with the KPFT Pep Rally radio song produced by me and Mr. Kurzweil. Harry Shearer reporting on the salacious sex scandal at Continental Public Radio. The Look of Love was Dusty Springfield, Burt Bacharach, and Kenny G, all playing at the same time. The Guns montage was Negative Land. Brainstorm is My Work in Progress, produced for that KPFT show on Friday overnight, hosted by George Shea, Stacy. The Marine Corps hymn was ruined by me. Dan Harmon critiqued ISIS beheading video technique from the Harmontown podcast. The Smurf, sex scandal, Powerball, Lupus PSA, PTNRA, mass shootings, Jeff Sessions used carnage, Michigan emergency management tips, dumb American study, The Generals, Dream by Smirk, RacistOnly.com, Cookie Monster and Kim, all from the National Lampoon's Final Edition Radio Hour. Produced by Tony Hendra from the original National Lampoon Radio Hour, along with Jeff Chrysler, created and or performed by Barry Lank, Jim Earl, Jeremy Rayburn, Steve Rosenfeld, Jim Dodd, Ben Kirchner, Rachel Rausch, Leslie Shapira, Megan Gallagher, Bruce Sherry, John Miller, Peter Kleinman, engineered by Greg Rush, just to name a few. TheFinalEdition.com is one of their many websites. Next up, one of my guiltiest pleasures, the Houston-based comedy podcast, The Whiskey Brothers. Highly recommended. If you're at work, wear headphones. Even playing the Whiskey Brothers podcast in the back room of the strip club, gambling with hookers and high on drugs, somebody will get offended. But they have toned it down a bit because they have added a woman to the act. She's a highly respected stripper, well known in the performing arts community, Kiki Maroon, who is a comedy stripper and manages a touring burlesque troupe based in Houston. The regular lineup currently is the black guy, Sam Damaris, two token white guys, Slade Ham, and the Right Reverend Rob Mungle, who was instrumental in encouraging me not to do any more stand-up. Another white guy, Dale Cheeseman, the hilarious newcomer, and the lovely Latina, Kiki Maroon. Now that you know who they are, the following, cleaned up for radio discussion, should make perfect sense. The Whiskey Brothers podcast from PraiseWhiskey.com.
So you guys have been busy here at home. Kiki, you're always doing your shows.
I'm always doing my stuff. I've realized that my mom has no idea what I do. Like she sees all my stuff, and she still does not understand my job.
I don't even think about that. Is your mom on your Facebook?
No, God, no.
Okay. Me neither.
Oh, yeah. God, no.
I told my mom not to do it because of the comments.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fair.
I was like,
you can't control.
I go, baby, mom, it's not me. It's I don't want you to see the people I hang out with. I know a guy named Rob Mungle.
That's your mom. She started tweeting, like, so they don't really know where I am or what I'm doing all the time.
Yeah, it's just that you're always naked.
And doing comedy.
I want to show a banana in my
hand. Rob, I feel like you don't know what she does.
Yeah, I don't. You and your mom talk all the time. We don't get it. I don't know. Is it something
there
with
are no bananas in my.
I tried to tell her that. She wouldn't listen. She would have none of it. I would listen, Mrs. Maroon.
My staff calls her Mama Maroon, actually.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Like, Mama Maroon, you got to understand. She leaves an interesting life.
I do live
And sometimes
life,
there are bananas.
Not.
And she falls on them.
But not on my.
Yeah, I know.
I like slip on them. Slapstick.
I made it clear.
So I did this photo shoot where I had these like ram's horn headpiece, with these gold hoops hanging down. But she called me today and she was like, "So I was looking at that picture that you have, and I was thinking you should call Marvel and tell them to make a superhero out of that character you did." Like, I'm just gonna call up Stanley.
You showed some initiative. Called Marvel. That's the people that do it. You're not going to get that way talking to those three drunk guys.
What I would do is I would say, "Hey, Mom, how about this? How about you call Marvel for me? And if they're interested, you give me a call and you let me know."
Give her a project.
One of two things is going to happen. Either A, she's going to get a very swift lesson of how the entertainment industry works, or B, you're going to get a call from Marvel.
I'd like to talk to you about my daughter. She has a silly horn thing.
Oh, no.
She needs to have a superpower.
Listen. No, she knows the superpower. This is the thing. She needs to call Marvel and make a superhero. Her name could be Ghetto Girl.
Ghetto Girl.
And I said, "What are you talking about?" She said, "You know how you have those big gold hoops on, like the big ghetto earrings?" So you could be Ghetto Girl, and your superpower can be that you know everything. because you know those ghetto girls are always like, you don't know me, you don't know me, and you would say, but I do know.
She's a genius.
And she goes, you were born in 83, your head was too big, so they had to cut your mama open and get you out, or you think David's your dad, but he's not. That was direct quote.
Oh my gosh.
She's got scripts ready.
Have her on the podcast.
Backstory.
She's serious.
Okay, now stay with me. This gonna sound racist. But it's not. Okay?
I told her it's not.
So it's gonna be a girl with a big head who can't get out of her mommy belly.
No, that was a bad guy.
Oh, I'm sorry. Start over. Hello, Marvel. This gonna sound a little racist. But I got a daughter, and she have a hat that had a hoop earring, and she can fight crime. So call me back. So I leave a number and you call me back. But here's the thing. Listen. Don't tell nobody. She got a secret identity. Nobody can know. But her name, Ghetto Girl.
So call me back at 7-1-3.
And she fight crying. She fight crying because she a good girl. I don't care how many bananas. She's a good girl.
Still bananas in my...
Don't care. You're still a good girl. You want to put the banana, that's your beanie. That's your beanie. You know what my beanie is? My business is making superheroes. I'm going to make you...
and tortillas.
You don't know nothing. You sit there. You sit there, be pretty.
Oh, build that wall.
You can try. You know who knock it down? Get a girl. Get a girl. Knock it down with her horn. She go. Hold on a minute. I knock it down for you. Come into America. Call me back.
I'm going to show my mom this podcast, and she's going to be really offended, Rob.
I got two words for you, Marvel. Two words. Diversity. You need to be more diversity.
You need to be more diversity.
You need something like Ghetto Girl to knock it down the wall, to bring tortillas and peace and prosperity. And we say, no. We have Ghetto Girl to defend us. That's her business. To defend us from the evil.
We need more diversity.
That's right. You heard it here first. I saw that on the CNN. They were talking about having no diversity.
I got two words. Diversity.
And you know what? Diversity, not just a college in Colombia.
Oh, my God.
Well, America needs now more than ever for the peace and the love. So you call me back anytime. I wake up. I don't sleep. Because I watch my daughter's Twitter all night, because she's doing crazy things.
Well, she watches TMZ all night, actually. Every time I go to LA, she calls me.
How come you're not on TMZ?
That's what she asked me. She's like, did you go on the TMZ tour? I'm like, no. No, I'm busy being on shows, trying to be on stages. Like,
you did the TMZ tour yet?
What? No, I'm trying to be famous.
All right. This is Johnny Depp house. You know who's not there? My daughter. She's not famous. Oh, looky here. Here's the Walk of Fame. What you know see here? Kikimaru. There's no Kikimaru on any of these stars. Maybe if she called Marvel, I can tell her to do. She gotta have a house. Oh, look over here. Oh, look over here. That's Gene Hackman. You know who not in Gene Hackman house? Kikimaru.
I think you do talk to my mom.
We're gonna go to the hot tour and not the one time, you're gonna see Kikimaru. I'll tell you what you do see. Look at that. That's Stan Lee. Stan Lee, are you not calling me for the ghetto girl? You want to make a money or you want to be old and stupid?
You're so stupid.
You're so stupid. You don't know nothing. So you know who knows everything? Ghetto girl.
Your mom is Al Pacino. Right. Say hello to my ghetto girl.
And let me tell you something. Jimmy, Johnny, Joe. Here, kick him around. Standing in the fire. Taking the heat. She's not in Big Daddy pocket. No, my friend. No, my friend. I will tell you this once and repeat it twice. You need to get the ghetto girl on your show. Or else I come down there and take a flamethrower to this place.
Oh my God.
Slade, Rob, Sam, Kiki, and her mom right here on the Whiskey Brothers podcast.
Question? Comment? Just need to vent? Email us at podcast@praisewhiskey.com.
All right. Hey, that was pretty good, huh? Good old Whiskey Brothers. That was Rob Mungle doing the voice. I've been working with the folks over at the news, the People's News. That's in the morning, you know, after Democracy Now, with Stacy, actually. Asked me to do a couple of intros, break music, you know, technical stuff. So I did. I sent them in, worked on them and sent them in. But I'm listening for them. They're not going on the air, see? And she said, well, that's pretty good. Well, try it like this. And so I went back and tried it like that. And she went, no, try it like that. And so I did it again. And then...
Work
She said, well, just do something interesting with it. So I said, all right. So I did something interesting with it. And I sent that back. And now she won't even answer my calls. So I don't know what's up. I'm going to play it for you. And you can, so you can judge for yourself. I mean, this is, or, you know, maybe she's right. Right? So let's check it out and see what you all think. Stay tuned for The People's News on KPFT Houston. Now, people have been asking me, well, people say, why would people call it The People's News? Because, you know, it's kind of, it sounds kind of Berkeley, kind of, you know. And, yeah, I kind of agree. I thought we should call it, like, Comrade Radio or maybe Commissar Propaganda Unit Number 17. That I wouldn't, but it didn't work. But in any case, why the People's Radio? Well, it's a long story, but let me. I don't know if you've ever heard the term. You could get a trained monkey to do that. Well, that's actually a radio term. A lot of people don't know it, but yeah, it's from the 40s, which is when they started training monkeys to do radio. Obviously, it couldn't cross over to television because, you know, you can't get away with it. But it was a way to get around unions, I think, originally. But in any case, this is community radio, and we couldn't afford our own monkey because it has to be trained. It has to be a trained monkey. Some guy down in Livingston had a small radio station down there, and they're going to donate their monkey, which they were going to replace. They told us because they were going to use, like, a computer, a simulated voice, or perhaps a parrot. To replace it, but it turned out to be otherwise. Actually, there was problems with the monkey apparently, and what they're saying is that the monkey actually figured out what it was saying, which is ridiculous because monkeys can't. You know, this isn't even a chimpanzee; it's a monkey. Because, well, you know, everybody knows chimpanzees can't talk. And they're pretty smart, too. If you had one around a radio station for a while, you know, after a couple of weeks, they want to be the program director or whatever. But no, they claim that absolutely this monkey had figured out what it was saying, and that's why it was beginning to become a real problem. Which is, if you know anything about trained talking monkeys, is ridiculous. Because, I mean, they just don't have the mental capacity for the vocabulary to actually understand it. You know, it's simple. Look, you just type the stuff out for them, and they read it. But they don't really know what they're saying. The monkey actually died before it showed up. Turns out, stone alcoholic monkey. Because apparently it really did figure out what it was saying. And realized that it was living a lie. It was just a corporate shill for whatever they're selling, and you know, and politics and whatever. Couldn't handle it and started drinking. I think maybe 10, 15 years ago. So you know, his liver shot, and they didn't have good health insurance there. So we couldn't get the monkey, and that's why you know we have to use people. We figured, well, you know, if we're going to be doing news using people instead of monkeys, that we better call it People's Radio, so we didn't get in any trouble. Another thing I heard was that the monkey was actually starting to ad lib a little bit on the news and throw some of his politics in there, which were, I don't know if you know about monkeys, even the trained monkeys, they're pretty social, they're pretty socialist, and really tribal. This monkey was just like dumping all over pretty much every other species. I mean, well, you know how they get. But apparently what it really was is that the humans that he was working with, they weren't really that self-actualized. They sort of were just like floating along on confirmation bias and creating their own little world as they go along. And it really broke his heart. It was a real blow to his worldview. But if the monkey was actually surprised by that kind of human behavior, then one would naturally have to assume that the monkey, like most humans, not really clear on the concept of evolution. I mean, it's not teleological. It doesn't have an end result. It's not trying to produce a superior species, a more complex species. It's essentially just a kind of a trial and error, disorganized crapshoot, whose end most often, 99% of the time, is not the is extinction, not the 2001 Star Baby. It doesn't really work out too well for anyone, unless you know you're a crocodile. But what I hadn't brought up yet is there's a lot to the story that doesn't really add up. And so I started to look into it and was talking to some of the people that work down there. Came to find out that a lot of the stuff that we were hearing of had been told about the monkey turning into an alcoholic and having all these existential crises that didn't really match up with the impressions of the people that hung out with a monkey. You know, and I got to thinking, you know, I mean, monkeys, they will drink you under the table. They can handle their liquor. And they tend not to have liver problems. And there's another reason why I'm skeptical about this whole drunken monkey narrative. Is that he's there at 6 o'clock in the morning having to read news, which isn't easy, by the way. And you don't need a degree from the Columbia School of Broadcasting to notice when a monkey is slurring his words. And, of course, we know from going to the zoo that when monkeys are drinking a little too much, you know, they get into the whole, you know what I'm saying, the whole, like, Louis C.K. act. And there doesn't seem to be any evidence of any real scandalous monkey behavior, or monkey business, I guess you would say, on his part. Just strictly a professional trained monkey journalist. So the more I looked into it, the weirder it got. A lot of the people that I talked to hadn't really heard this story. They didn't even know that the monkey was leaving. And when I talked to the GM, it became clear what was going on was that the phone calls that Larry was getting from down there, that wasn't the GM calling him. It was the monkey. It was the monkey. The monkey was behind the whole thing from the beginning. Because apparently the monkey was very unhappy. You know, it wasn't a station like KPFT. It was like AM radio station. A lot of church stuff. And they had a lot of preachers and people even more unpleasant than that. I mean, they would play like Michael Savage and these very unevolved sort of humans. And some of the, you know, some of the news copy that he had to read, was very disconcerting to a more, you know, a genteel monkey with, you know, sort of socialist tendencies. So this whole thing turns out it's a ruse that the monkey was just trying to escape the radio station, and it figured out, wow, what better place to hide out than a place like KPFT, where he wouldn't feel like all alone, you know, in his feelings about, you know, the way that society should be structured and so forth. Some of the people that talked to me, they were hiding something. You could tell, and I think they found out what he was up to, and I don't know. It's your guess as well as mine as to where he is now. If he made his escape somewhere, I mean, maybe, you know, maybe he made it off to one of the other Pacifica stations or a community station like KPFT outside of Texas, hopefully. I hope so. Or maybe they busted him. And if you think human rights are bad, animal rights, not great. But anyway, so that's how we got People's Radio. Another weird radio saga, the saga of the disappearing monkey. Not just the paw, the whole thing. And I'm sorry, I never got to meet with him. Because all of the trained monkey radio readers that I've known, like I said, they didn't know what they were talking about. They would pretend to believe in, like, objectivity and balance and news. And of course, that's all propaganda about the propaganda, so you could do the propaganda. And anybody that knows that, even the monkeys, so... But I wish him well, and if you're out there, buddy, if you're listening, call up. We'll keep you anonymous, and you can tell us what you've been up to. And, you know, if you're still in radio or journalism, it'd be a great interview. I think our audience would dig it. If it's too good to be true, it's probably not true. And, yeah, you know, the whole idea that we were going to get a free monkey, well, I mean, that should have raised some red flags. So I guess we won't fall for that again. But hence, you know, People's Radio, what the heck. So hang in there and stay tuned and see what these people have to say. They can be interesting, too. But I have to say that there's one thing that does kind of bother me about this lost opportunity, I guess you call it. The whole global warming, the way that it's going, I mean, I could see it that I could end up in New Jersey pounding on the sand looking at a rusted out Statue of Liberty. And, you know, and in that case, it would be nice to have some connections and know somebody or somewhere to get something to eat, I guess. I should probably just go ahead and bury some food somewhere now. Now I'm thinking about it.
So, do you think you figured out why they didn't play your intro?
Yeah, it was too long, huh?
Yeah, a little. And what else?
There's some trade secrets in there about radio.
Monkeys?
Yeah, monkeys. We're not supposed to talk about that. I should mention that this is the voice in my head.
Hey.
That I've had ever since I got back from the MK Ultra.
How you doing? How did we end up over there?
I don't know. I was just leaving one of those board meetings, and I got picked up.
Unmarked car.
And they brought me in. They wanted me to sign some kind of admission paper into this program, and I said, no, I'm not.
Who's they?
I don't know. Whoever's behind all this. I don't know what happened. I just kind of remember waking up, and I'm looking down at my hand, and it's signing this thing, and that was a while ago.
So that's why I haven't been on the radio.
Well, that, and, you know, I was kind of burned out.
Yeah. So how do you like Don just, you know, taking your place?
Oh, I like Don a lot. I enjoy the show. He's great. And, hey, man, it's time to get some new people in here. I'm sorry. And they're doing a great job.
So you don't think he's just, like, you know, going to kick you out?
No. What, you mean, like, this is all a big plot to get rid of me?
Okay. Oh, come on. Don't be naive. This is bigger than you.
Oh, I got it. Okay, now right now it all makes perfect sense.
These guys don't want us in here.
What guys?
You know who I'm talking about.
No.
We know too much.
I don't feel like I'm getting any smarter.
And Stacy won't return your calls.
Oh, she's in on it, huh?
I hear people talk around here.
But how do you hear people that I can't hear?
Because I talk to all the other voices inside other people's heads. We hang out.
You're trying to say everybody's crazy around here?
You're the one that said that.
Whoa, did you hear that? Did you hear that? Coming from inside the station!
Inside job, told you.
Yeah, what's up, family? This is Zion, a.k.a. Baba Zumbi, man. And I'm here chilling with the Brown Berets, you feel me? I'm with my man Sandino on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM. You can check us out at freakradio.org, you know what I'm saying? This is the global local, representing for the people, man. One love.
I want to deal with a bigger insult, man. The heat.
It's coming down hard. We got to get shit together.
It's time to go left and not right. Gotta get it together forever. Gotta get it together for brothers. Gotta get it together for sisters. For mothers and fathers and dead niggas. For non-conformists, one-hitter quitters. For Tyson types, for shade figures. Let's get it together, come on, let's make it.
Gotta make it,
to make it,
to make it,
to make it,
to make something happen,
to make something happen,
to make something happen,
let's make something happen.
Word to Viper, gonna bring it to the overlord. Drinking Cisco, chilling with the gold microphone cords. And we grip our balls every time we stuntin' on tour. Cause we never bore, responding to the ready crowds roar. And promoters try to hit us with the audible. We about our business, we not quitters, not bullshitters. We deliver, we go getters, don't be bitter, cause we not just niggas.
Jerome, my fire open to different claws. Ain't nothing forbidden, the chicken kid is written off. Hard as fit in the city, I think it's fitting, getting so confused. In the maze, you can fool your brain. It's a lust of planning for our future people. None of our people involved. Foreign handy, you're smearing off. Forget it, cracking off. Cracking off and smearing off. Completely turn the Molotov. Molotov the spaceship door before that bitch is taking off. And always seems the poorest persons. The people forsaken dog. The Washington's, Jefferson's, Jackson's on the captain's log. They'd rather leave us to the gray and water poison deli small. Fast unblackening, it's happening. You feel it, y'all. I'd rather see we can take by the structure with many bars. Leave us where we are so they can play among the stars. We're taking off to Mars. Got the space vessels overflowing. What you think they want us there? All us niggas not going.
Reputation ain't growing, reparations ain't flowing. If you find yourself stuck in the pit, you better start rowing. Used to see the TV screen as a place I land my dream in the car stereo. Where they would promote the show. Optimistic little brother, little girl. Hope you know.
Space program for niggas. Blow yourself, kid, nigga. We ain't a space program for niggas. Blow yourself, kid, nigga. We ain't a space program for niggas. Blow yourself, kid, nigga.
Sitting wonder sometimes, I read the paper every day. All these happenings are secular, just happen different ways. And the president's refining her wings, she's confined with about 30 Percocets and 5 bottles of wine. Carolina, nothing finer than a black woman who climbs to the top of the state building, claiming that their flag is mine now. People on top of people feels like we can't breathe. Put so much in this motherfucker, feel like we shouldn't leave. Put it on TV, put it in movies, put it in our face. These notions and ideas, the citizens live in this space. I chuckle just like all of y'all. Absurdity, after all, takes money to get it running and money from trees don't fall. Imagine for one second all my people of color, please. Imagine for one second all the people in poverty. No matter the skin tone, culture or time zone. Think the ones who got it would even think to throw you a bone. Moved you out your neighborhood, did they find you a home? Non-safer, probably no place to. Imagine if the shit was really talk about space, dude. Imagine if the shit was really talk about space, dude.
trying to go left and not right. Gotta get it together forever. Gotta get it together for brothers. Gotta get it together for sisters. For mothers and brothers and dead niggas. For non-conformers, one-hitter quitters. For Tyson types and shape figures. Let's make something happen. Let's make something happen. Let's make something happen. Let's make something happen. Gotta get it together for brothers. Gotta get it together for sisters. For mothers and brothers and dead niggas. For non-conformers, one-hitter quitters. For Tyson types and shape figures. Make, make, make. Let's make something happen. Let's make something happen. Let's make something happen. Let's make something happen. Gotta get it together forever. Gotta get it together for brothers. Gotta get it together for sisters. For mothers and brothers and dead niggas. For non-conformers, one hit acquitted. For Tyson types and chain figures. Let's make something happen. Let's make something happen. Gotta get it together for brothers. Gotta get it together for sisters. For mothers and brothers and dead niggas. For non-conformers, one hit acquitted. For types and chain figures. Wait, wait, wait. Let's make something happen. Let's make something happen. Let's make something happen. Let's make something happen. Gotta get it together forever. Gotta get it together for brothers. Gotta get it together for sisters. For mothers and brothers and dead niggas. For non-conformers, one-hit quitters. For types and chain figures. Let's make something happen. Let's make something happen. Gotta get it together for brothers. Gotta get it together for sisters. For mothers and fathers and dead niggas. For non-conformers, one hit acquitters. For types and chain figures. Make, make, make. Let's make something happen. Let's make something happen. Let's make something happen. Let's make something happen.
Here, a small step for mankind, but a giant step for us.
Doompa, 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 doompa. I've got another puzzle for you.
Cause we the people are still here in the rear, yo, we don't need you. You ain't a killing off good young nigga move. When we get hungry, we eat the same fucking food, the ramen noodle. You simple voodoo is so maniacal, reliable to pull a choo-choo. The irony is that this bad bitch in my lap, she don't tell me she make money, she don't study that. She gon' give it to me, ain't gon' tell me none of that. She gon' take the brain to where the place she sit on that. The doors are signed with it. Don't try to rhyme with it. VH1 has a show that you can waste your time with. Guilty pleasure, take the edge off reality. And for a salary, I probably do that just sporadically. The OG Gucci boots are smitten with iguanas. The IRS promise me a nigga getting common. Niggas in the hood living in a fishbowl. Gentrify here, now it's not a shithole. Trendsetter, I know my shit's cold. Handsetter, baby, cause I ain't so cold. But yeah, all you black folks, you must go. You Mexicans, you must go. And all of you poor folks, you must go. Muslims and gays, boy, we hate your ways. So all you bad folks, you must go.
The fog and the smog of the media, the lost false narratives of guys that came up against the odds. We're not just nigga rappers with the bars. It's kismet that we're cosmic with the stars. You bastards overlooking street art, better yet street smart, but you keep us off the charts. Some of the fucking numbers ain't a statistician. Fuck y'all know about true competition. It's like the A.O. picture on there talking about he hitting. The only one who's hitting are the ones that's currently spitting. We got to Missy smitten, rubbing on a little kitten. Dreaming of a world that's equal for women with no division. Boy, I tell you, that's vision. Like Tony Romo when he hitting with it. To try and be the best in a division. Shaheed Muhammad cut it with precision. Who can come back years later
shot. Still I'm trying to move you up the fucking block. Babylon blood clot. Troop on your head, talk.
All you black folks, you must go. All you Mexicans, you must go. And all you poor folks, you must go. Muslims and gays, worry, hate, and waste. So all you bad folks, you must go.
Girl, this motherfucker's got rhythm, that rhythm, that rhythm, that rhythm, that rhythm.
Doing life in prison. Just another dummy caught up in the system. Unruly hooligan who belongs in carpet. First getting at the reaction for the harvest. And by my work ethic, the way I speak, yo, should it be mentally weak? First we in Malik, yo, should it be trapped in the trap? Would you prefer that? Fourth grade eating level, but he knows how to rap. Are you amused by our struggles? The English that's broken, the weed that I'm smoking, the guns that I'm toting, the drugs that I'm selling. No need for improvement. Fuck you and who you think I should be. Forward movement.
Melanated shouted in complexity. Brain charge shocking like electricity. How translate happens organically. The media relates to what it thinks it sees. Judging steps and shoes of a path they never walk. Shot down in the blaze of a phrase is how they talk. Dark skin walk of the bot betrayed villain. I'm chilling, filling down at a DNA crime villain. Supplement their youth, hypersexualizing women. They ain't got the strong enough hold, so they built a prison. Pumping false religions to all of these niggas' systems. Every voice devoid of the truth. Come on.
Like a billionaire investing in a nigga's dream. Certainly a head scratcher like talking big skillers capture. Or a woman with the wisdom who's leading the way. The rarity is in the rear, but never today. Yup, man, picture a PD letting good records play. On the strength of what it is, not the finesse of your biz. And your lady calls you dirty, her dirt's under rug. You'll find out only if she tells you, take her kiss and hug. Cause in the answer for cancer in a prodigious kid's mind. Yes, the government with unlearning is free for everyone. And from that lie, your leaders will rise in the eye of despair and adversity. In some universes, this will be true. Everybody running when they see the storms coming, but whatever's gonna be will be true. Everybody running when they see the storms coming, but whatever's gonna be will be. Some will dash to the mountain, some will crawl. And the weakest amongst them, they will fall. But the strongest in faith, they will stand up. Everybody running when they see the storms coming, but whatever's gonna be will be.
I just wanna feel as liberated as lions in Liberia. Cause recently my heart turned cold as Siberia. Cause everywhere I go being cold is the criteria. Let's see how well you know all your tribe trivia. Green and the white, we serving at Nigeria. North side of Queens, 192 is the area. This is for my dogs from Shih Tzus to Terriers. Fuck it, it's showtime, tip, make sure they hear ya.
Out when looking at me, hand. Love all of me, fan. One, two, three, them, all of the gang.
Move a couple pound of weed and a couple dollar, man.
not done.
Put your foot on one.
And pick up the sound, man.
DJ Walk. Hey, yo, put my top. Then I want up, then I want up. It's your outline of my first cloud chop.
Early in the night when you pound the music with the pipes in the bank and the sound of your music live and direct when it all goes down.
Like an idiot boy, you know when I fuck up.
Big tune make the world go around.
Make we bring the sound boy proud.
Them finna, where the wicked is sound.
I'm watching on your face, make a sound boy proud.
Status Chris Paul or John Paul in the league. Grab a mic, still the knuckles will bleed. Cause I believe the potent man of potent have you geek like speed. If rationale is natural, I will weave. It's all edges and peace. Second press, we on a permanent steeze.
I'm in the world where my prince is a player. Ain't you feeling my beta? And my lore grows greater and greater. Kim Trail dropped toy in his vapor. Had him shaking like Gator.
Been chill, nigga, process to data.
Blu-ray, wave, follow up later. I DVR to later. Cop a monster with a G, I'm a waiter. You can't define us X, Y, Z, Z is a generation. Over leaders, happy cheating, virtual think pieces.
See these written words with clinical science. Brains defiant, thoughts heavy, baby, they're a major appliance. Leave a tan when chopping to flying us to a giant. Dudes nice, he kite screws in with some pliers. Cool with some buyers, yeah, nigga, cool with some growers.
Never know tattle tales, only I don't know us. Yeah, show me generation, show us what you gon' show us. So listen, mommy, see, we could collude with a boy. Mouthpiece like horns with a jubilant noise. Dudes rude and as useless as coins. Shoot them boys, burst and rehearse in the soothing alone. Talk to Joey, Earl, Kendrick, Cole. Gatekeepers of flow. They are extensions of instinctual soul. It's the highest of commodity grade, and you can get it today. One hit and reading pages of Poe. Telly is low, cuddle bunny ready to go. Day of the dead,
where we all are zombies instead.
And it's just your aftermath, Buster cutting your dreads.
Bruce Lee and niggas, Ryo niggas, UFC. Smoke trio niggas, sizzle out your USB.
Surge pricing on these Ubers, I'ma give you a cab.
Yo, where'd you over at?
Arriving on impeccable grass. I'll be in my seat, waiting for that law to pass.
Fashion, been waiting for Archette's title since last. Such a tie-tie pose, gangrene on that ass.
Magic Mike on the mic, David Blaine Douglas Henning.
In the church of Buster Rhymes, it's my sermon, you get me. Horizontal spitting, I'm the exorcist of your wicked. Don't get your loving, nigga. Sorry, that's a sin unforgiven. Like how we be skipping on bees like cookie crack in the kitchen.
Just start the package, dry it, bag up the wet. It's Mad City's not a game, easy, quiet, or set. Fine, student of the past, trailblazing the day. Not acknowledging a trend of swept up in a phase. You still the highest of commodity grades. And you can get it, get it, get it, get it, get it today.
Ninja.
call you back, simple as that. Ain't no almanac, so lit in the dictionary. I might just call a cab, cause I did canary. Yellow accents on a dog, bitch. I met her back when she kept all our carpet. I'm well aware all this shit is fantasy. I double dare you all the fuck your plan B. Dads, they mean the mama's mannerisms. That me, don't mean to get vulgar, but it's some holes in it, bitch, like a box of donuts. It cold out in it, bitch, standing on the corner. Condolences to niggas that got erased. I pour out some liquor on the cop's grave. Digital church bells ringing across the street, sure work well. Yeah. Kids, don't you know how hard this shit is fantasy? Yeah. Kids, don't you know how hard this shit is fantasy? Yeah. Kids, don't you know how hard this shit is fantasy? Yeah. For real.
Get up now, I don't wanna go to school. I don't wanna be the best, I wanna follow rules. Mom, I think you fucking lied to me. Three stacks said all this shit is fantasy. It's my time, gonna put a little light to it. If life's an obstacle, then I'ma bike to it. I see it like a kitty on a carousel. If I earl while I go around, what the hell? And that went well. So I'm compelled to have visions of getting chicken while my friends get gel. My young nigga motto was fuck it, I'm already grown. And I dream of when I'm 16, I'm out my home. That petty though, cut my mama boyfriend though. It's kinda long like this old head hustle, yo. Be cognizant of a nigga ride and die. I see us getting money through my green eye.
Kids, don't you know how hard this shit is fantasy? Kids, don't you know how hard this shit is fantasy? Kids, don't you know how hard this shit is fantasy? Say I'm the shit. I'm Chick-fil-A nuggets, McDonald's french fries, spicy Popeyes, and Red Lobster biscuits. Girl Scout famines, call my penmanship, but oh shit, look like I'm hungry now again.
And I can't do nothing about it because my teeth are all rotted, and my mom and my pop, they just grin. And empathize with me because they were little like babies, but too bad they can't get back, they remember when. Them grown-up stories don't work in the court of the kiddies, the judgment is in. And while y'all doing all y'all biz, y'all are reminiscing kids.
But the kids, the grown-ups won't own up. They stood on the corner like you once upon a time and probably felt like a loner. Smelled like a stoner, snuck to Daytona.
So when they come to you about who or who you ain't voting, complaining that you always moaning, never saying good morning, storming out my house and slamming doors like you paying bills. They been through it too though, they were kids like you though.
But what if they knew though, and you with the cheat code to a game you just start playing, no extra man.
Leave you reckless on the court with no high percentage shot, just a bunch of you got a nigga, just give it what you got.
Yeah, it look different on the yacht, but ain't gonna lie, I miss kayaking. I love the young niggas and they do too, they just be acting
like a bunch of retired high thespians, a bit too salty.
Shit, they blood pressure high, why they don't play no more? Probably.
Plays the mannequin.
Raising my hand, teacher says not again. The sun is up, but I feel down again. On just one hand, I can count all my friends. The understudy for the star, the show must go on. I'm a beast on a leash, I'm told from the lawn. Another notch in my belt, the blues getting scarce. Another notch in my belt, she shakes up the stairs. Drink liquid confidence to kill us, our defense. Get rid of the sense, it makes life make sense. As I come off the fence and break through defense. Anxiety is on the ropes and it's getting intense. Population getting tired now, and everybody wants to spy now. Racist emails fire out. We did it in the dark, it's coming out. The world is crazy and I cannot sleep, but melatonin good enough to eat, but I read the paper so that I can see what I'd rather stay indoors and make a beat, but my mother said a lot of lies were to me. Her Bible was like her truly peasy headed and unruly. I made her think she got to me, following the trailer reaper and niggas talking through speakers, fattest faces through my sneakers. The rappers for ghetto preachers thought I had it, so I tried it for so long I would just hide it. Then I made the crowd say, oh, so the more get excited. I was hooked, I couldn't shake it. The more I got, I would take it. Couldn't sleep, it couldn't eat, but this life I would not forsake it. Said I really dream of color now, and every brother ain't a brother now. Hot melatonin like these Swedish fish, together everything I dying wish.
Chain, I'm handling your terrain, your valley. Pass me, standing down to the follicle. About half of this bottle full of reasons for us to ball. Calming violations and travel vacations, huh? Place on your fancy bra. Go take them vestments off. Skin in my lips involve them licking a place for some Jedi.
Is this enough?
it an issue if I make you nut, but there's no quality time, cause I forever rhyme. This is not an excuse, I just wanna get loose. That's old nigga jargon. Girl, you're making me harden to a stone or granite statue. I'm prone to get at you. It's hard to break your defense. I guess I have to leap fence and scale wall and break fall on a tree right by your window. Reward me for my efforts by rolling this endo. As I nibble your neck naughtily, sex is a big part of me. Agencies want a part of me. Searches looping for sodomy. My thrust bust artery. I know you're under me. Just wanna have shenanigans. Wanna make you mad again. So focus on the flattery you feel when I fling it. Acknowledge that I got it and you love it when I bring it. Dirty talk loudly, saying fuck this shit. At the queen's request, if it's gotta be, it's gotta be. Is this enough?
Transmitting live and direct, man, from the planet Earth. It's your boy Opio Lindsay, representing Souls of Mission of Hieroglyphics crew, man. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM, online at freakradio.org. Unlicensed, commercial, free, man. Underground shit, pirate radio, the shit I fuck with, you know what I mean? I take mine, I don't ask for it, you know what I mean? Let's get this shit real hip hop, baby. One love.
Hello and welcome to Witness, I'm Raggy Omar. Las Vegas is the land of glitter, glamour and gambling, and if you believe the hype, a place to get rich quick. In just 1 year, the Las Vegas casinos can rake in more than $6 billion in revenue. And yet, in the state of Nevada, home to Las Vegas, 1 in 10 people is unemployed, and there are between 11 and 14,000 homeless people in Las Vegas itself. But the homeless are kept well out of sight of the all-important tourists. You can even be arrested for feeding a homeless person in a park. So, where do they all go? Well, quite a number of them have made their homes in the tunnels and storm drains right under the busy highways and casinos. Under the Neon by filmmaker Hazel Chandler is an extraordinary journey below the surface of the bright lights of Las Vegas to meet some of these people who are battling to make some kind of home under the streets of gold.
On the surface, Las Vegas is still a city where people dream of making a fortune. And despite the economic crisis, planes still land and take off every few seconds. Under all the neon is a labyrinth of tunnels and storm drains that are home to the homeless. The belief that Vegas streets are paved with gold draws people from across America and creates a unique homeless population. Help of South Nevada is one of several outreach groups working with the homeless.
We have an unusually higher number here because we have everyone else is homeless. I had an individual from Los Angeles who was naive enough to think that he was going to break Las Vegas. Several hundred thousand dollars were lost in a matter of weeks. We have those type of stories on a daily basis here.
It seems as if every time we get two out and into housing, we end up with two more. Two of our clients are right in this right-hand tunnel.
Wendy, we're very, very interested in taking you on a caseload. We'd like to take you home.
And I want to do this. I'm ready in 3 years.
All right, so we're going to expect you up there.
All right, Annette, and I'll be there by 2 o'clock.
Okay. And Wendy, if something happens that you can't make it up there, we're going to come back and see you next week. Is that okay?
Okay, that's cool.
Turns out that she has got a number of cans that she needs to have recycled to get some money in her pocket. Then she's going to come up and see us. It's a crapshoot if that's going to happen. Once the money's in the pocket, chances are the drug man will be very close behind her and the party will continue down in this tunnel.
No one really knows how many live in this subterranean world. They are out of sight, so out of mind. It's a world few from the surface have access to. One who does is writer Matthew O'Brien, who has spent 7 years exploring the storm drains.
There's more than 300 miles of underground flood channels in the Las Vegas Valley. Some of them are really kind of low and wet and not really walkable because they can fill a foot per minute with flood water. So when I stumbled upon the first camp, I definitely took a few steps backward and was trying to figure out what was going on here.
I've been down here for a little over a year, and when I met her, it's been about 6 months now.
Yeah, 6 months.
She's been down here about 6 months. But just because we live outside doesn't mean you have to be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
One man's junk is another man's treasure. I used to have a job and everything like that too. I'm even college educated. And I let drugs get the better of me. You know, I let it take all my money. I let it control me. Which is something I'm working on now. You know, I got a beautiful, beautiful girlfriend who loves me and I love her. And we realize, you know, if we're going to have a future together, that this is not it. And we're working on that. I was very surprised that she would stay with me. I have a legal issue that I need to work out.
Yeah.
It's a big issue. So
once we get that resolved.
Once I get that resolved, we can really step forward. But yeah, we do have plans for the future.
Yeah.
Blue! Give me a voice! Where are you at?
There you go.
There's a lot of money in the casinos. And, people tend to walk away from their money on slot machines. Just simply forget it. And that's pretty much what we do. And we just recognize that the money's left on there and we take it off it. Sometimes, you know, it could be, you know, 50 cents to a dollar. Sometimes it can be several hundred dollars to as much as $1,000.
Privacy is a factor. And
intimacy can be a little hard.
But just to get changed or something, usually everybody's pretty good. I mean, that's the beauty of the darkness. You always see someone coming before they arrive.
If they see the light. Flashlights, yeah. And stuff.
Yeah. You see the light. And if he's with me, he'll just start barking, so, which I love that.
We know that this is not a legal place for us to stay.
Yeah, we are trespassing.
We are trespassing. We do know that, and that's a bad thing.
We're not visible, which is a good thing. That's why I think they leave us alone.
Yeah. I don't look at us completely as homeless. We're just people without a home at the moment.
That's some of the disadvantages of people who don't care about other people.
Yeah,
stuff.
This is annoying and smelly. When it gets hot, it's going to be a whole nightmare.
It's the bottles that they urinate in. You don't want to switch from that. I'll change highways in a while as I am walking one more mile. On the road that I've taken, one day walking, I awaken, one day walk, I awaken on the road that I have taken. From the Book of Counted Sorrows.
My mom knows I'm in here, but she doesn't really care because, you know, it's a tunnel. It's
you know, what are we doing wrong in here besides just, you know? I mean, it's not like we're shooting crack and we're just down here painting. They're walking on scaffolding up there. So we must be right under the new Caesar's tower. That was awesome. And this right here, it's been disc, but you can tell it was really a beautiful piece of work. I'm surprised this one's lasted. You can tell at the bottom how old it is. See, the water is pouring in from down here. I did do it, and then it got dissed. Some people came and you can see some marks in it, and then I just came back with the same colors and kind of fixed it.
There was a time, I mean, back when I first started writing, that's all I cared about. It's just, oh, I want people to see my work, I want people to see my know my name. Now I just don't really care about it as much. I just want to just paint and peace.
I'll create art somehow, you know, so. Without it, I think I'd probably be a lot more stressed out.
Once you become broke, you're thrown out. You're almost casted like a leper. You know what I mean?
It's terrible.
Yeah, but it's our own fault. I don't blame nobody. I think we're each responsible for our actions. We've all been raised different.
How are you? I went out and just made enough to get by. Because, like I told you before, I'm just getting tired of doing it. You know, I've been doing it for so many years, and some people do want help. I'm not one to go and ask, and it seems to be a pride thing. I haven't seen no social services down here for 3 years.
I've been locking stuff up, putting it on pallets now.
I just feel more depressed this month, but then I get what I need, and then I gamble. I think the gambling addiction is way up on a scale higher than the drug use here. If you're in here sleeping and it rains outside for 15 minutes, it's coming. It's on the way down.
You gotta get on your back and just stay right and float with it. Because if you try anything else, everything's hitting you. And it's scraping, you hit when it curves, and it just takes you right over there. And this looks smooth. But let me tell you, it takes the skin right off.
I'll get out of my mess sooner or later. It's just lack of willpower, I think, and depression, and too many things happened at once. Yeah. My wife died, and then 6 months later, my dad was filled with cancer and died. And I was glad to help him, but it took its toll on me. And like I said, I think I died then. When they died, I just fell off a turnip truck here, and they do go find it and jump back on it. And I will. Oh, every day I would write something down, this one here. I used to have an open mind, but my brains kept falling out. I just let my mind wander, and it didn't come back. So I started out with nothing,
I still got most of it. And my last one, I can handle pain until it hurts.
So what hope is there for those who have built their homes on these dark and dangerous tunnels? Join me after the break to meet some more of this community living under the neon and the people who are trying to help them. Welcome back to Witness. The bright lights of Las Vegas hide some very dark secrets, including the thousands of homeless people hidden away from the glitz of the casinos. The storm drains and tunnels directly under the casinos are home to hundreds of people who, despite the damp and dangers, are determined to make some kind of home.
Idea for a living, and I want to go back to work, or I want to get away from here. If my family knew how I was living, they would have a fit. Young lady I let stay in my apartment, stole basically everything I had. $2,000 worth of camera equipment. Didn't have any money, and I couldn't afford a hotel room, and actually I paid a guy $10 to stay. Started gathering material and items to sleep on, and just became a home. Tried to make it as comfortable as possible. I made it too comfortable because it's kind of hard to leave now. It's almost like it's acceptable, but it's not. Good girl.
Yeah.
You know he's called ambulance.
Michael's neighbor Connie has badly burned her shoulder, and Matthew has called the ambulance. But Connie is afraid that if the paramedics come down here, then the police will follow and move them on.
Don't stop him, Brian, because it's going to cause a lot of ruckus down here.
Oh, God. It's not that bad.
Mike,
what?
Come here.
I've already seen you.
Then get her ass up there.
She hasn't made that decision. It's not...
Decision's made. It's like I made it for you.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm sorry,
Mike. Her face is not that bad, guys.
How you doing, honey?
Not at all.
Shut up!
Connie refuses to see the paramedics, and the ambulance is sent away.
The occupants of the tunnels are the individuals that have been successful at the homeless level. They've become very good at being homeless. And it's almost like private communes down there of folks that have been homeless together for a long time, have some sort of trust in each other. There is safety in numbers.
It's just a steel pipe. Yeah, I got my little handmade toys.
Old fashioned.
Yeah. That's braided 10 gauge wire. Not that I've ever needed it, just makes me feel better. And if I roll over and there's somebody standing there, believe that I will swing this at them. That's my ex-wife. The boy on the left is my son, and the boy on the right is my stepson. We were real close. He didn't even know I wasn't his dad until we got divorced, and then the first thing my wife did is tell him that we weren't. I wasn't his father. He wouldn't let me see him. When I was in prison, I couldn't talk to him the whole time because there wasn't nobody calling. But I wrote him every week, so... As a matter of fact, one of them white things is full of nothing but letters that I got back from him. Oh, that's the toughest thing I've had in years and years and years. I just threatened myself, though, so there's not a lot I can do about it. I mean, just try to keep working on it. But until I can get myself back on my feet, it's not that bad. It ain't great life, but it's not worst I've ever seen either. I'd rather be in here than sleeping out there in the weather.
Where you came from sometimes to me must have been really bad if this seems like a better life to you. And I think some people get down so far that it looks like up to them, and they no longer consider themselves part of society.
Most of the homeless who don't live in the tunnels queue daily for the shelters or live in tents on the streets.
You're traveling in what's called the Corridor of Hope. This is the homeless corridor. I don't think there's a tree in a field in the city of Las Vegas that doesn't have someone living underneath it.
It's nice to think that you help somebody, but you're also telling somebody, hey, this is as good as it gets. Giving you a tent and a blanket and a sandwich and I'll see you. They're still homeless. That person's probably thinking, you know, I'm home, and I got a tent, so kind of finalized it.
If an individual wanted to exit homelessness and had the motivation to do so, he could successfully do that with the amount of programs that are available here.
Around 25% of the homeless are war veterans. The rest either have mental health problems, drugs, alcohol, or gambling addictions, or simply lost their way after a crisis.
We know that we're not going to have success with somebody immediately putting the needle, the pipe, or the beer can down. We know our clients are going to fail. We are just there for them when they do fail and offer additional services and resources.
It's a hard fight. I mean, I lost my dad in 1986, and that was hard. That's all I ever had in my life, and this is harder than that. You know, we don't care about ourselves like we should. I'm having a hard time. I'm trying to learn who I am and what I am, and then I'm worth something. It's kind of hard, though. My stress levels, I have none. I have no anger problems or nothing, as long as I stay clean. But staying clean is a battle. It's the hardest battle I've ever had to fight. Once you're down and out, society will beat you down even farther.
The systems that, you know, are set to try to assist people are much more dysfunctional than the people they're trying to assist.
We've lived in this little pipe here for 5 years. There'll be floodwaters coming, flowing down through here and coming up just to the rim of this pipe. They'll be stuck in there for 2 or 3 days.
You have to offer them hope more than once. If they take it, okay. If they don't, doesn't mean you have to hate them. Doesn't mean you have to quit, you know. But it just means that they're not ready.
I hate asking for money. I hate asking for things. You know, I mean, it bothers me terrible. Because I know I'm capable of making a living and stuff. And I will do it again, but... It's what do you do when you get into this position? This ain't right. I tell all of them, this ain't right. You're down in a tunnel. You're living in a war. It ain't all right.
It Ain't Right, Indeed. A moving reflection on homelessness. Thank you for watching and join me next time for Witness.
One time. Yo, 1212, it's Rock Ira Science, Dilated Peoples, Expansion Team Sound System, Universal Zulu Nation, Rock Steady Crew Worldwide. And I'm chilling with my people building bridges. Brown Beret Radio, don't get it twisted and don't touch that dial, man. Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3. And we calling it Free Radio because we going for freedom, not just because you ain't got to pay for it. And if you can't check us out here, check us out on freakradio.org, man. That's what it is. Don't touch that dial unless you're trying to turn it up.
You are listening to Losing Moses on the Freeway by Chris Hedges, given on March 3rd, 2006 at All Saints Church in Pasadena.
War, he soon understood, was industrial slaughter. Villages were put to flame, water buffaloes shot for sport, human beings machine gunned from the air. Grenades tossed down tunnels were often women and children, rather than guerrilla fighters huddled in fear. As a young officer, he had at his fingertips the heady ability to call in airstrikes and firepower that obliterated landscapes and thatched roofed huts and fiery infernos. It was the power to give or deprive human life, and with this power, he and those around him soon became sick and demented. His moral universe was turned upside down. Where was God in Vietnam? He asked himself. It is the question all who have been to war ask. When love, compassion, and human kindness are replaced by the vast, grotesque panorama of violence and destruction of war, God is banished. For war is a godless endeavor. Human beings who have the freedom to choose good and evil cannot expect to find God when they embrace a world of sin. At that moment, they shut out the divine. Packard spent a year as an army lieutenant leading platoons. He and his men killed in each encounter anywhere from 12 to 15 North Vietnamese, Viet Cong, and perhaps Chinese mercenaries. They did it clinically, efficiently. He said he stopped counting how many young men and boys he killed. But with about 30 ambushes and firefights, you can do the math, he said. He was good at what he did, and part of him enjoyed it. I violated the commandment, you shall not kill, he said. Nothing will be gained by intellectualizing this. I killed other people. I took lives. It was exactly that. I became in Vietnam a professional killer. I was proud of what I could do. And there are days when I meet with people trying to do what is right and good for the church, for others, and think I am probably the only person here who has killed another human being. He received the Silver Star and 2 Bronze Stars for valor. He spent his last months in the Army teaching ambush tactics to Rangers, but he returned home disillusioned, hating the war. He entered the seminary in 1971, not sure that he wanted to be a priest, but to study the ethical and moral issues that confronted me in Vietnam. And it was only then that he began to confront the war. He discovered that all is not right with the world as he had been taught, that honoring nation and family and believing in a God that leads to victory and righteousness and success does not mean we will be saved, or indeed victorious, or even successful. He discovered the lie he had been told, the idolatry of our civic religion, one that grafts the will to power onto the will of God. And in this knowledge, he made a painful self-discovery, not only about himself, but about the human race. His naive belief in the goodness of our country and the individual, one that gave him, as it gives all of us, comfort and moral certitude, was obliterated forever in Vietnam. He peered into the human soul, and what he saw looking back horrified him. But out of that pain and alienation came knowledge, a need to reclaim life. Of all of the commandments that are broken, the Torah says, Only those who murder cannot be certain of forgiveness. For forgiveness, the Torah says, can only be granted by the murdered victim. Murder leaves a stain. It marks you. The Hebrew word to kill, rush, appears in the Hebrew Bible 46 times, and the commandment is probably better translated as do not murder, although this remains debated by biblical scholars. And there is a difference between killing someone who is trying to kill you and killing someone who does not have the power to harm you. The first is killing, and the second is murder. But killing and murder are both sinful, and those who kill even in self-defense must harbor the pain of taking another life within them. The failure of religious institutions, whose texts are unequivocal about murder, to address the sinful state of war, has left them unable to cope with the reality of war. These institutions have little or nothing to say in wartime because the god they worship is often a false god, one that promises victory to those who obey the law and believe in the manifest destiny of the nation. In theological terms, war is sin, writes William Mahady, who was a Catholic chaplain in Vietnam. This has nothing to do with whether a particular war is justified or whether isolated incidents in a soldier's war were right or wrong. The point is that war, as a human enterprise, is a matter of sin. It is a form of hatred for one's fellow human beings. It produces alienation from others and nihilism, and it ultimately represents a turning away from God. In the seventh commandment, the prohibition against adultery, I wrote about a young man whose father was in a committed relationship, had an affair, of which this young man was the result, and then disappeared from this young man's life. The boy had to grow up without a father. The rage that consumed the young man I wrote about, Vargas, was a rage born out of a life without love. A life conceived outside of romantic love, a life where he was forced to live alone. His mother was never a mother to him. He grew up in a series of foster homes, suffering sexual and emotional abuse. He drifted into the Latin Kings, sold drugs, ended up in prison, got out, had two children of his own, and when I met him, was trying desperately to find in himself the ability to be a father. His rage, the rage of the unloved, is one that sweeps across human history like a plague. It pushes people like Vargas to destroy as they have been destroyed. It leaves emotions dead, numb. Any kind of atrocity or violence is possible against the innocent and the weak, against a world that seems to have betrayed those who must live without love. When we are rejected or betrayed by those we love, those we have opened ourselves to be most intimate with, we taste a bit of death, the ultimate rejection of our being. Rejection, especially as profound a rejection as Vargas endured, diminishes and destroys us. The resentment and anger caused by rejection, raging like a swirling torrent, threatens to swamp our fragile, sea-tossed life. And the only hope of renewal is forgiveness. If we cannot forgive, if we cannot allow ourselves to be vulnerable again, if we shut the doors of our most intimate emotions, if we shut out the possibility of new friendship and love. And once this door is closed, we become, in some sense, dead. We die like the orphans that are not held and coddled as infants without love. It is as precious a life force as water, and the worst torment of those I write about in this book are those who had to endure a life without love. What is hell, Fyodor Dostoevsky wrote, the suffering of being no longer able to love. The eighth commandment, you shall not steal, Theft, of course, is a violation most of us all have experienced. But I wanted to look at the culture of theft, one endemic in the corporate world, one that has ruined the lives of tens of millions of Americans. In 1983, Foster Winans was co-writing the Hurt on the Street column for the Wall Street Journal, one of the best-read stock market columns in the country. If a company was praised in the column, the price of its stock rose the next day. If a company was disparaged, its share price often dipped. He was making $28,000 a year. He went home to a small apartment on a block of six-story tenements on East 14th Street in New York. But for a man who had never completed college and grown up in rural Pennsylvania, his job, which he loved, represented success. He wrote about the deals orchestrated by financial power brokers who were raking in millions, often in ways that were unethical and unlawful. He watched the feeding frenzy in the Wall Street shark tank from behind the glass partitions of his profession. He watched them dine in the city's finest restaurants, navigate through traffic in limousines, fuel their long work days with cocaine, flaunt the tailored suits and homes and vacations that come with massive, rapid wealth. The world he wrote about glittered before his eyes, alluring, unreachable, seductive. He resented the ease of their lives while he struggled to pay rent. It looked easy enough. Insider trading was rife, fueled by a buoyant market and huge mergers that handed the fate of corporations to investment bankers. And those on the inside took care of themselves, passing on private vital investment information and cutting deals behind closed doors before mergers went public or earnings reports were released. This gave them and the wealthy clients they worked for an advantage in stock trades and netted tidy profits. Stock research analysts, who were supposed to impartially rate stocks for investors, instead lauded stocks from corporations that were paying huge banking fees to their firms. These analysts were also being highly compensated for bringing in new business, although the conflicts of interest were never disclosed to the millions of investors who watched these analysts being interviewed on television or quoted in columns such as the one written by Winans. Independent auditors to cover up the theft were put on the payroll of the corporations they were hired to monitor. When Enron went bankrupt, it was paying Arthur Andersen $500,000 a week in consulting fees, although the accounting firm was in charge of carrying out independent audits on Enron for investors. The internal accounting within corporations became an elaborate shell game with reports of phantom profits and hidden losses. Corporations stopped reporting stock options, for example, despite the fact that it diverted millions to its top executives as expenses in their earning reports. And there are millions of Americans today who have lost their retirement or their children's education because the accounting industry, stock analysts, regulatory agencies, investment bankers, and the heads of the country's corporations put greed before integrity. The public has been systematically robbed, not only of its money, but more ominously its faith in the country's leading financial and governmental institutions. And most of us have lost. The country's tiny oligarchy has amassed huge fortunes. Between 1989 and 1997, a staggering 86% of stock market gains went to the top 10% of American households. Research analysts were just the pawnbrokers for a much larger scam, Winans told me. Trading desks at major brokerage houses where the real money is made harvested and exploited insider information about analysts' recommendations to reward their most profitable accounts. The institutional investors like mutual and pension funds. A subculture sprang up just to cash in on corporate whisper numbers, those salacious-sounding quarterly profit forecasts leaked to analysts before the rest of the investing public. Handouts of sure thing initial public stock offerings to favored clients have been well documented, but don't expect billion-dollar settlements. The crimes he saw going on around him, and he saw a lot, were hard for outsiders to detect. They appeared victimless. There were few prosecutions. The rewards were immense. And this deceit had become deeply embedded in the investment world. Those who were slick and well-connected did not seem to get caught, or if they did, they often received little more than a slap on the wrist. He grew tired of being the little guy, watching from the sidelines as everyone else exploited the system while he had trouble paying rent. It was like being in a candy store, he said, and there was nobody behind the counter. You think, who's going to miss a few butterscotches? The crime he committed was a small infraction, but a symptom of the deep ethical and moral morass within American culture that began during the Reagan years. The market, Reagan officials argued, could regulate itself. But with no checks or watchdog agencies left, greed soon began to assume unheard-of proportions. CEOs of companies helped themselves to hundreds of millions of dollars as their small investors are wiped out. This culture of greed has weakened, if not broken, the social contract in America. The old contract went like this. 1. If you play by the rules, you can get ahead and have a decent life. 2. Everybody gets a voice in making the rules. And 3. Everybody who breaks the rules is judged by the same standards and is equal before the law. But today the inverse is oftener true. Those who play by the rules increasingly do not get ahead and cannot afford basic necessities such as affordable housing, education for their children, or adequate health care, while those who flagrantly and openly violate the rules reap massive profits. They win, the rest of us lose. The result, as we see in the Bush administration, is a growing cynicism, an undermining of the legitimacy of a system that needs to be built on trust, a world where the weak become the prey for the powerful. Healthcare fraud alone is estimated at $100 to $400 billion a year. The savings and loan fraud of the late 1980s, which former Attorney General Dick Thornburgh called the biggest white-collar swindle in history, cost the country anywhere from between $300 billion to $500 billion. And America's new oligarchy is creating a world that resembles the one shaped by the robber barons of the last century, a world where workers struggle on inadequate salaries without job protection and the rich create private kingdoms of wealth and privilege. This growing disparity in wealth sees the top 1% of households in America wealthier than the entire bottom 90% combined. And this oligarchy has fused political and economic power that, if left unchecked, will lead to tyranny. There are an estimated 40 lobbyists for every member of Congress, and these lobbyists spend over $1.5 billion a year on behalf of their powerful clients to abolish restrictions on monopolies, further weaken regulatory agencies, roll back environmental protection, and push through greater tax breaks for the wealthy and their corporate interests. These lobbyists would not be there if they did not get what they want. When a government and public institutions are no longer trusted, when they become engines solely for personal power and wealth at the expense of the interests and welfare of the public, the fabric of a democratic society disintegrates. When it becomes clear that moral probity and honesty do not pay, that cheating and lying are the only way to get ahead, that everyone from politicians to business leaders to journalists steal and lie to cover up their theft, a deadly cynicism leads to political paralysis. People begin to believe nothing, or rather they believe what they want to believe. And Winans, who served time in prison for insider trading, walked away from his experience determined to live another way. Redemption is a process, he told me. Redemption suggests that you have learned something in life, that through your example you pass values on to others. Redemption suggests your life has meaning. This meaning is always about sacrifice, about helping others, and perhaps about being invisible. Redemption means life is not about me. It means you have to be willing to give up everything, even your life, to be saved. It means resisting the temptation to steal and always telling the truth, even when it hurts you, even when you are afraid. It means having dignity. It means trust. And the ninth commandment, the commandment that calls on us not to bear false witness against your neighbor. I wrote about two chess shops on Thompson Street in Greenwich Village in New York that have been engaged in a long and protracted war, one filled with venom, envy, and hatred. The shops create crippling price wars, send spies into each other's establishments, prohibit their patrons from entering the shop of their rival, and are so consumed by distrust that it poisons the small, cramped rooms where players rent sets and pound down pieces on the wooden boards. The Bible warns from the story of Cain and Abel to the commandment not to bear false witness against your neighbor of the destructive power of perpetual war against a rival. Such rival usually ends not only with the destruction of the enemy, but self-destruction, a hatred eventually consumes all who embrace it. Finally, for the last commandment, the warning not to covet. I looked at the self-help guru Anthony J. Robbins, who promises his followers that with his techniques they will become rich and powerful. They will be able to manipulate the world around them. Robbins has tapped into this deep, burning fear that has swept through our culture. He understands how we see ourselves, our feelings of unworthiness. He knows how we have been manipulated. He grasps the despair that makes us suspend judgment for hope. And that is what he sells, hope. Hope is the single most profitable commodity on the market. The man or woman who has it all, who can make anything happen, the American ideal, the God-man, is the image Robbins reflects back on his adoring followers. He purports to embody this ideal, and he promises to share it. He will make us divine, and he knows how desperately we want it, how desperately we want to believe it is possible, and how, if we were to realize the great con game, how we have all been had, the tidal wave of despair that would sweep over us for squandering our lives on the worthless and ridiculous trifles of office titles and stock options would destroy us. But his followers are in too deep. They cannot let go of the sinking sides of the ship. We would be better prepared if we were taught to endure and cope with failure rather than success. For all lives, when viewed from the inside, are failures. We all fail to be the person we want to be. This is inevitable, for we are human. We fail to achieve all that we want to achieve. We fail to love. We fail those we love in small and large ways, and we will be failed by them. We will suffer betrayal at times and feel unappreciated. We will never be as good as our expectations. We will never overcome all our faults. We will be inconsistent and act in ways that are foolish or mean or thoughtless. This is part of our ordinariness, part of the failures inherent in human life. And the flight from uncertainty and insecurity into the arms of people like Robbins, who promise to banish uncertainty and insecurity, has the pernicious effect of making us more uncertain and more insecure. The flight when we blame ourselves for not being good enough to achieve our goals makes us afraid, afraid of ourselves, afraid that we are underneath the facade, the person that people like Robbins despise. ordinary, fallible people. We cannot forgive ourselves and seek to cover up our weakness and our fear, seek to redouble our efforts to be extraordinary.
You've been listening to Losing Moses on the Freeway by Chris Hedges, who gave four talks at All Saints Church in Pasadena, California on March 3rd, 4th, and 5th that were recorded by Cheryl Roberts, Don Cannon, and Mansoor Sabah. This is Lisa Cox Cartner for Global Voices for Justice. For a copy of this program in its entirety, which is 75 minutes, visit our website at globalvoicesforjustice.org or call 323-850-4464. That's 323-850-4464. Our music is by the Magic Bullet Theory, a local group based in Long Beach, California. Thank you for listening.
What up? This is Eli, Living Legends, and you're listening to Free Radio 101.3 Santa Cruz, online at freakradio.org. This is commercial-free, unlicensed, community-supported radio for the people, with Augusto, Caesar, Sandino, and El Segundo. I left my wallet there too, baby. Peace.
This is a KVMR News special. I'm Mike Thornton. Doctors and nurses from across the U.S. and Canada came to California's state capital in Sacramento on Tuesday, June 12th, to forward the cause of real health care reform. The California Nurses Association, the CNA, held a rally on the west steps of the Capitol, but in this case, the real action was going on inside the building. California State Senator Sheila Kuehl, co-author of SB 840, a single-payer health care reform measure, was holding a legislative briefing. And the star of the show was documentary filmmaker Michael Moore, who was in Sacramento to premiere his new film and searing expose of the healthcare industry, Sicko.
Senator Kuehl, thank you so much for holding this briefing and for the work that you've done, and to the other state senators and assembly people here who have worked for a free universal health care for every citizen of this state. In making this film for the last couple of years, actually the film grew out of a story I did back in 1999. I had a TV show called The Awful Truth. And I became aware of a young man who was fully covered by Humana Health Insurance, one of the largest health insurance companies in the country. And he worked full-time at a national drugstore chain. His diabetes had reached a point to where his doctor decided that he needed both a kidney and a pancreas transplant. Humana, his health insurance company, approved the kidney transplant but denied the pancreas transplant. The reason why the nurses are laughing is because they know without the pancreas, the kidney, and the life doesn't continue to exist. It's one of many ways that health insurance companies try to trick up the system, make it look like they're doing something for their clients, when in fact, their bottom line, their primary goal is to make as much money as possible. I took this young man to Humana headquarters with my camera crew, and I asked them if they would please pay for his pancreas transplant. They said not only would they not do that, they showed us the door. But out on the front lawn of this headquarters of Humana in Louisville, Kentucky, as we were ushered out, we then decided to hold the man's funeral a few months in advance of when he'd actually be dead. So with the man present and his priest and the pallbearers and the bagpipes and the casket, we conducted his funeral on the lawn of Humana health insured systems. They were so appalled and embarrassed and frightened by what we had just done and how this would look on national television that within 3 days they agreed to pay for the pancreas transplant and thus save the man's life. Although that ran for only 10 minutes on a cable channel called Bravo, I began to think at that moment, if we could save one man's life in 10 minutes with nothing more than this tool, this camera, and a microphone, what else could we do? And so I thought, what could we do in 120 minutes? How many lives could we save? And initially I started out by, let's go after Aetna, let's go after Blue Cross of California, let's really take on these people. And then I thought, but wait a minute, that's going to miss the point here. The problem isn't just Blue Cross of California or Humana or Pfizer or Eli Lilly or the Hospital Corporation of America and the Frist family. The problem isn't just them. The problem is the system itself. It's the system that's broken. And fixing one little piece of it here and one little piece of it there is not going to provide universal health coverage for all Americans. It simply won't happen in our lifetime if we continue along this path. And so I began to feel that what had to happen here was a complete change in the system. I don't know how many people are aware of this, but the number one cause of bankruptcy now in the United States are medical bills. The number one cause of homelessness are medical bills. And in this film that you'll see tonight, we obtained some of Nixon's famous White House tapes. But these aren't the discussions about Watergate. I will show in this film, on February 17, 1971, a conversation between John Ehrlichman and Richard Nixon. And they are about to put forth the bills that would bring us the modern-day HMOs. And Ehrlichman says to Nixon, Now, there's one more piece of this we have to figure out. We want to talk to the vice president about this, and it's about these health maintenance organizations like Edgar Kaiser's Permanente thing, as he put it. And Nixon interrupts him and he goes, I don't want to talk about any of these damn medical programs. And Ehrlichman goes, no, wait, this is a private enterprise one. And Nixon goes, oh, okay, I like that. And then Ehrlichman essentially boils down what would become the health insurance system that we now have today. Ehrlichman says to Nixon, the genius of Edgar Kaiser is what they want to do here is to try and provide as little care as possible so they can make the biggest profit possible. And suddenly Nixon lights up. And he says, okay, this is great, fine, not bad, let's do this. And that's what they did. Once they understood what the basic premise was, that it was to provide less care for more profit, that was something that they loved. And that is the system that we have. And the reason why, as our friend here said, the reason why we have to eliminate health insurance companies, I mean, they literally have to be removed from the equation. The reason for this is that there's no room for them. Because there should never be room for the word profit when you're trying to make a decision whether or not to provide somebody care when they get sick. Bottom line, you can never allow this to happen. And they can't make a profit unless they deny care, unless they deny claims, unless they keep people off the rolls who have pre-existing conditions or kick people off the rolls who have diseases that become too expensive for them. They can't make a profit. And so let me just pause for a second and say something on behalf of the health insurance corporations in America. Our laws state very clearly that they have a legal fiduciary responsibility to maximize profits for the shareholders. If they don't do that, they could be put in jail. So they are required by law to turn as big a profit as they can. And the only way they can turn the big profit is to not pay out the money, is to not provide the care. So therefore, there's no way that this can work. There's no way that we can continue to have these health insurance companies making these decisions. Nor should we have private profit-making hospitals making decisions. A hospital that has to make a decision based on the bottom line as to whether or not they're going to provide care, this is absolutely antithetical to basic human rights. And we're the only country in the Western world that doesn't believe that it's a human right to provide free, universal health coverage for every one of its citizens. We're the only country and this is what's so amazing, isn't it? Because we're all Americans. You know, we're amongst the most generous people on earth. We're a good people. We have a good heart and a good soul, and we have a conscience. We know right from wrong. And the fact that we would allow 9 million of our children to go uninsured, 9 million children across this country, we won't even insure the children in America. What is wrong with us? That's not who we are. That's not what we used to be about. You know, this every man for himself attitude, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You know, you got your problems, I got mine. You know, don't bother me. You know, this me. That's not how they exist in these other countries, in Canada and Britain and Ireland and France, these other places. They believe in we. We. They believe we're all in the same boat and we sink or swim together. They believe that if too many people fall between the cracks, their society suffers as a result of it. What happened to us? I think we used to believe that somewhere along the line, somewhere way, way back. You know, my grandfather was a country doctor. He was paid with eggs and milk and a chicken every now and then. You know, he did it because he cared for people. He didn't do it to make money. You know, the sad thing about the American Medical Association is that they have fought every good reform for the people of this country in the last century. They fought Social Security. They fought Medicare. You'll see in my film the head of the AMA back in 1962 giving a big speech about how dare we help old people with Medicare. It's really weird to look at it now, like to actually see a doctor saying such a thing. But that's where the AMA, well, I think a lot of doctors these days, and of course the AMA, they were all behind the HMOs when Nixon and that whole thing started in the 70s. But doctors now are amongst the most demoralized people in this country because they realize they've been given the shaft by the insurance company. And what used to take one person sitting behind the glass when you went into the doctor's office filling out the forms, and there's now five or six people back there arguing on the phone with the insurance company to get a $15 bill paid. How much is that costing us? Well, actually, there's statistics. We know how much it's costing us. The overhead goes up to 30% of a health insurance company's budget. 30% it costs for overhead, red tape, bureaucracy, paperwork. Now, when I did a little thing out on the street, and I just stopping people, and I said, now, you know, these private health insurance companies, they spend up to 30% on overhead and red tape and all this. What do you think the government spends on their bureaucracy, their paperwork for their health program, Medicare, Medicaid? And people would say, well, let's see, if Aetna and Kaiser is spending, you know, 25, 30%, well, it's got to be 40%. The government's doing it, right? The government's got to be 50%. I said, no, it's 3%. That's how much it costs to run Medicare and Medicaid, 3%. You know, in Canada, they run their entire free universal health care system, total overhead, total bureaucracy, 1.7% of the total health care budget. We have listened to this for the last 30-plus years about how the federal government is bad, state government is bad government, bad, bad, you know. And it's like, how did we ever cop the attitude that the government of, by, and for the people could be bad? Because the government's us, and we're not bad. I don't understand this. I don't understand. But they've done a good job, haven't they, convincing the average American, you don't want to get the government involved. When somebody says that to me, you know what I say to them? I said, you know, really, you don't want the government involved? Ask your grandparents if that Social Security check comes every month. And it not only comes every month. My dad says, it comes on the same day through the government-sponsored U.S. mail. And remarkably, it's the same amount every month. They actually get the check right. How do they do that? Tens of millions of seniors every month get a Social Security check on time for the exact amount. We, the American people, have fallen for this myth that government is bad. It's only as bad. I heard Al Franken say a couple months ago, he said, you know, the Republicans, they run on a platform of the government is bad, it's evil, you don't let the government run things. And then once elected, they spend the next 4 years proving themselves right. You know, this whole thing, what you're attempting to do here in this state, I read a story there, Blue Cross of California is already promising to spend $2 million I'm sure they'll spend a lot more than that fighting you. Because this is the last thing that they want to have happen. And they're going to fight this because, and they're going to try and scare people. Socialized medicine. Ooh, socialized. Bad. Really? Isn't that what our police departments are? Socialized? Run by the government? Free service? Do you think anybody would ever ask if the fire department should have to post a profit? You know? Do you think, seriously, would we allow a fire department to, every time they get a call for a house fire, when they arrive at the house, determine whether or not this is going to affect the fire department's bottom line? We wouldn't allow that, would we? Well, when someone is wheeled into a hospital, that question should never be asked. Never. That's an immoral question in a humane society to ask that question. Where's the profit here? How is this going to affect our bottom line? How are we going to make money off this sick person? This doesn't look good, folks. I mean, it doesn't look good to the rest of the world, and it won't look good to the anthropologists who dig us up hundreds of years from now. They'll wonder, what were these people thinking? In closing, I want to say that we spent a good deal of time in this great state in making this film. Unfortunately, it was for all the wrong reasons. It was following the plight of people who couldn't pay their hospital bills at a Kaiser-owned hospital and dumped on Skid Row in downtown Los Angeles in their hospital gown to wander out into the street not knowing where they're at. It was following Blue Cross of California and how they, after someone had an expensive operation, tried to get them knocked off their rolls. They hire private investigators to dig up anything they can in people's past to get them knocked off or to repay the bill for the operation. You'll see in one scene, the most ridiculous scene in the movie, where a woman who had Blue Cross of California, she had an operation. It ran around $7,000 for the procedure. Blue Cross paid it, but then they sent out their investigators. Find out what you can on her. We don't want to pay this $7,000. You know, we want try and get the money back if you can. And they found out that years earlier, this woman had had a yeast infection. And they... Yes. And they then demanded the $7,000 back. I'm surprised they didn't find that she had sneezed 10 years ago into a Kleenex somewhere. They're laughing, but this is a true story. This is what they do. And you're going to hear other testimony here from people, two from the Los Angeles area and one from Kentucky. And I'll let Donnell tell her story of what happened. And when you hear these stories, these aren't anecdotal stories. These are stories that are representative of the evidence that exists. And the evidence says that we lose 18,000 Americans every year simply because they don't have a health insurance card. And how many thousands we lose because people are, even when they have insurance, can't afford the co-pays, can't afford the deductibles. You'll see at the beginning of the movie, one woman is an editor of a small town paper. Her husband's a machinist. They work good jobs. They're middle-class people. And they end up in their 50s living in their daughter's basement because they've been bankrupted by medical bills. And they had health insurance. They had health insurance. The co-pays and the deductibles alone bankrupted them. And the premium, jacking the premium up so high that they could no longer afford to keep their own home. That should not be happening in the United States of America. It's a crime. And I believe that these insurance companies are a criminal racket. We allow them to exist legally, but I don't think they should. And I think they've got to be removed from this process. And I sincerely hope that California will take the lead, as you have done so often in the past, when the rest of the country has to come, be brought along, kicking and screaming. You know, it was you that decided that people shouldn't be paid $5.15 an hour as a minimum wage. That was this state. It was this state that said we have to protect our environment and demand that the automakers put devices on cars to cut down on pollution and global warming. That was this state. And you've done so many other things like this. Lead the way again for this country. Be a shining beacon of light for what America has to do. Remove profit. Remove the insurance companies from this. Regulate the pharmaceutical companies like a public utility. Strictly regulate them. And guarantee health coverage for all Americans and all the people in this state. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a KVMR News special, a legislative briefing on health care reform that took place Tuesday, June 12th at the California State Capitol in Sacramento. Among the people testifying, documentary filmmaker Michael Moore, who was in the capital city to premiere his new documentary film, Sicko, a searing expose of the health care industry. For KVMR FM, I'm Mike Thornton.
Hi, R. Duck here, reaching out to you, our friendly listeners of FRSC, the finest radio in Santa Cruz. We ask you to keep an eye out and let us know for a new studio location. We need something urgently, preferably by September 20th. If you have such a location, let us know. We can give you $500 as a thank you gift. It needs electricity. We can connect up an internet, and a bathroom is also required. Contact FRSC at freakradio.org, and we'll see you on Friday night, 8:30 p.m. until Friday night. At 8:30 p.m., thank you, and thanks for your ongoing help to make such mischief possible.
Pacifica, this is Democracy Now!
The use of prostitutes in conditions of poverty and helplessness and conflict is exploitation. It is abuse. And it's intolerable in our organization. What happened to let the country director go away with some dignity? What's wrong? This is something that wouldn't happen today in Oxfam.
Oxfam is facing a growing crisis for covering up sex crimes by its aid workers in Haiti after the devastating 2010 earthquake. We'll speak to the reporter at the Times of London who exposed the scandal, plus the head of the Coalition Against Trafficking in Women, and the Haitian writer Edwidge Dantica in Miami. Then we look at the role of Army Junior Reserve Officer Training Corps programs after Nicholas Cruz, a former JROTC cadet, carried out one of the deadliest school shootings in U.S. history. Cruz was on the school's JROTC rifle team when it received a $10,000 grant from the NRA. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Syrian government's continuing its deadly barrage of airstrikes and artillery fire against the rebel-held enclave of Eastern Ghouta outside capital Damascus. Aid workers report at least 200 people have been killed over the last 48 hours. Many of the victims are women and children. On Tuesday, the charity UNICEF released a nearly blank statement on the killings, writing, "No words will do justice to the children killed, their mothers, their fathers, and their loved ones," followed by quote marks and 10 blank lines. State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert called Tuesday for an immediate ceasefire. We call on all parties to commit to the unconditional de-escalation of violence. Russia must end its support of the Assad regime and its allies. They're responsible for the attacks, for the dire humanitarian situation in East Ghouta, and for the horrendous civilian death toll. The United States supports the United Nations demand for a month-long cessation of violence to allow for the unfettered delivery of humanitarian supplies and the urgent medical evacuation of civilians in East Ghouta. The cessation of violence must begin now, and those needing emergency assistance should be allowed to evacuate immediately.
In Florida, 100 students who survived the deadly shooting at the Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School have arrived at the Florida Capitol, Tallahassee, to demand action from lawmakers on gun control. This is Alfonso Calderon, one of the students.
My friends and the families that are never going to have their kids come back with them again. That motivates me every single day, and it will never be a deterrent for any reason. Nothing could bring me down being reminded every single day of the horrific things I saw and hopefully no one ever has to see ever again.
Their arrival came as the Florida legislature voted down a measure to open debate on banning large-capacity magazines and semi-automatic rifles, such as the AR-15 that was used by the shooter, a white former student named Nicholas Cruz. The student activists are planning to march to the Florida legislature this morning. Meanwhile, President Trump is calling for a ban on so-called bump stocks, which allow semi-automatic rifles to act like machine guns capable of firing hundreds of rounds per minute.
Just a few moments ago, I signed a memorandum directing the Attorney General to propose regulations to ban all devices that turn legal weapons into machine guns. I expect that these critical regulations will be finalized, Jeff, very soon. The key in all of these efforts, as I said in my remarks the day after the shooting, is that we cannot merely take actions that make us feel like we are making a difference. We must actually make a difference.
The National Rifle Association heavily lobbied for a rule change on the sale of bump stocks rather than a congressional ban following the Las Vegas massacre. Rule changes can be easily reversed and avoid Congress taking up regulations on the sale of bump stocks and other gun control measures. President Trump is also hosting a listening session at the White House today with high school students and teachers who've survived mass shootings around the country. Meanwhile, in Florida, while the legislature voted down debate on gun control, it did approve a resolution declaring pornography a health risk, particularly for teenagers. President Trump has again attacked one of the 19 women who've accused him of sexual harassment and assault after her story was published in a front-page Washington Post article headlined, "Is Anyone Listening?" Rachel Crooks accuses Trump of forcibly kissing her without her consent on the lips while she worked as a receptionist in Trump Tower in 2005. On Tuesday, President Trump called her a liar, tweeting, quote, "A woman I don't know and to the best of my knowledge never met is on the front page of the fake news Washington Post saying I kissed her for 2 minutes yet in the lobby of Trump Tower 12 years ago. Never happened. Who would do this in a public space with live security?" Unquote. In response, Rachel Crooks called on Trump to release the security camera footage. This is Rachel Crooks recounting the incident at a news conference here in New York in December.
About 12 years ago, as a young receptionist in Trump Tower, I was forcibly kissed by Mr. Trump during our first introduction. Mr. Trump repeatedly kissed my cheeks and ultimately my lips in an encounter that has since impacted my life well beyond the initial occurrence and feelings of self-doubt and insignificance I had. That some men think they can use their power, position, or notoriety to demean and attack women speaks to their character, not ours, which, believe me, is a tough lesson learned.
Rachel Crooks is now running for a seat in the Ohio State Legislature. To hear our discussion with more of the women who've accused President Trump of sexual harassment, assault, or misconduct, go to democracynow.org. In more